director of Portland Normal. I'm also the host of the Russ Bellbell Show on CannabisRadio.com, live every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time. 2 hours of news, interviews, analysis, opinion, data, a whole bunch of stuff. Great way to get caught up. The news is right at the top of the hour, too, so make it really easy for you. CannabisRadio.com, 3 o'clock every weekday. And I write for a number of websites, including MarijuanaPolitics.com, every weekday, HighTimes.com, twice a week, and CannabisCulture.com, once a week. Also, occasionally, Huffington Post. So, I've been covering marijuana reform, marijuana legalization, for 10 years now, and one of the things that I've discovered is that our fight really isn't so much about marijuana itself, as it's an extension of our fight for freedom and liberty in a larger sense. Marijuana is kind of the messenger here, and we are the soldiers in this war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs. Don't tell me we're a drug-free America. Every time I turn on my TV, I see a drug commercial, or another. So today's talk is about getting our minds away from thinking of this as the right to get high or freeing the plant, and more about freeing the people, regardless of why they're using marijuana. Some people like to say all use is medical, and that's a fine sentiment. I like to say all use is an onion. It's an onion in business. Why are you talking? Medical, recreational, because I like it, spiritual, it doesn't matter. And so when we start to think of marijuana as more a civil rights issue and more personal liberty issue, we can avoid getting ourselves pigeonholed and turned into the opponents will say, oh, you're just trying to get high, you just want to write me high. So in this talk, we're going to take a look at this and show how marijuana legalization and the prohibition of marijuana and cannabis and hemp have all worked against our most precious liberties as Americans. We don't talk a lot about our constitution and our liberties and our schools anymore, so we'll take some time to take a look at our liberties and how prohibition has affected almost every one of them. We also want to take a look at the foundation of prohibition. Why are we prohibiting the cannabis plant? Where did that come from? Why did it continue? We'll wrap things up by taking a look at what's going on here in Oregon. Now that we've legalized, what is there left to do? Why are we still here? Why are we still fighting? So the first thing to understand is that prohibition is about controlling people. Marijuana is illegal because it's Schedule 1 on a controlled substance.
Oh, great, it is now.
On a controlled substance act. But it doesn't control the substance whatsoever. The DEA doesn't come in and point guns at marijuana plants. They point them at the people growing them, and their kids, and their pets. There's nothing about a controlled substance act that controls substances. If it did, none of us would be able to get a hold of any weed. And there's plenty of that and plenty of other drugs as well. Another big portion of this fight for legalization is to understand who the architects were. And on this slide, in the corner, you can see the picture of probably the most evil man that has ever been a bureaucrat in our federal government. That's Harry J. Anslinger. He was our very first drug czar before they ever called it a drug czar. This is a guy who was so against cannabis, marijuana, and the people who used it, and other drugs, that he basically, you know who the singer Billie Holiday is? The old-time singer Billie Holiday. He basically tracked Billie Holiday down and held her to her death, to the point where she was shackled to her deathbed on various narcotics charges, because he wanted so bad to put away the blacks who were using the marijuana and making it more popular. So, first of all, marijuana prohibition is a very new phenomenon. Sometimes I don't even say we're going to legalize marijuana. We're going to re-legalize marijuana. It had been legal for centuries in this country until the 1900s. We started in 1909 to get these first anti-pot laws. They're passed in El Paso, Texas,
to deal with the Mexican problem.
Mexicans came across the border to taper drugs. There couldn't be taper drugs. And so they're fighting against that. the one you see in the marijuana was illegal. By 1937, all 48 states, because there were only 48 back then, the entire country, every state had already prohibited marijuana, and then we had a federal prohibition in 1937. But here's some of the stuff they use. It's all a propaganda campaign. And this is not, you know, crazy Fox News stuff. This is mainstream publications like Newsweek.
Along the top there, you can see what are the demographics for pot smokers in Wisconsin, the whole state.
percent of the people who live in Milwaukee County are white. 27% are African American. 19% are Hispanic. So I took all my mug shots, 2 months worth of mug shots of personal amount of marijuana, and I started separating them into piles of white mug shots, Hispanic mug shots, and black mug shots. And it's not a science, I'm guessing. There could be some Dominicans in there that I miscategorized. I don't know, I'm just taking a wild guess, right? But I thought it would still kind of give us that gut punch feeling of how racist marijuana enforcement is. So here's how it works. We're going to step up the mug shots 10 at a time, right? So there we have 10 white mug shots. 10 white mug shots over the white area of Milwaukee County, Wisconsin. And we'll put in 10 Hispanic mug shots right there in the Hispanic section. And then we'll put 10 black mug shots there in the black section, right? Now, if this were being enforced fairly, each section would have a relative amount based on whether there are twice as many white mug shots as there are black and Hispanic. So I kept piling up the mug shots, but I ran into a problem. There was only one more white mug shot. 2 months. Milwaukee County, Wisconsin, 11 people got their mugshot online for marijuana possession. And there were 5 more Hispanic mugshots. 5 more, so a total of 15 Hispanics who got busted for 25 grams of marijuana possession. And then there's 10 more of black mugshots. And there were still more black mugshots. So let's just move it over here, fellas. 30. 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100, 110, 120, 130, 138 black mugshots. So, it's not scientific. Some people got their mugshots taken off the website, maybe because they can afford a lawyer. Some people didn't. But whether it's scientific or not, doesn't matter. Those people are going to go try to get a job somewhere. And that mugshot's going to be online to haunt them every time they try to go get a job. That's the racism of the war on marijuana. All right, let's take a breather here because that kind of hits you. But the war on marijuana affects all our civil liberties as well. The war on marijuana is a war against people who want to exercise sovereignty over their own mind and body. It's the government telling you how you can feel, how you can think, and what you can do. And I think it's important as we move forward with this to frame this as a civil rights act. And sometimes I get pushback on that because people say, wow, hold on. Pot smoking, that's not like the African-American civil rights battle or women's rights battle or gay rights battle. And no, it's not. There are differences. But liberty is different. And if we're going to believe people have the right to believe things, then we should feel that globally. For example, pregnancy, abortion, women's right to choose. I keep getting told that it's my body, my choice. Well, how does that not apply to marijuana? Your uterus, your choice, my lung is my choice. My brain, my choice. So if we're going to have personal sovereignty, shouldn't it apply to marijuana? We also don't allow discrimination on ethnic background or national origin. Well, what is the amount of ethnic background and national origin that distinguishes somebody? Well, you have a common creed or a common set of beliefs, or you come from the same place, or you have the same sort of traditions, or have the same language or slang. Well, how does that not apply to the cannabis community? We have our own traditions, we have 420, we have a whole holiday. We have past the duchy on the left-hand side. We have all sorts of traditions. Yeah. So why does that not apply to us? And then, of course, religious belief. We can't discriminate against people. And sometimes people say, with us, people are born black or gay. They're not born pot smokers. And I say, well, yeah, but nobody's born Catholic. They choose to be Catholic or Mormon. They may have been born into that family, but once you become an adult, it's your choice to remain in that religion. So why do we discriminate against people like us who believe a certain way? We are harmless people. And it's always funny to me when we have these people trying to ban our rights and cannabis, when you know more about the Founding Fathers. Have you ever seen the bar tab for the Constitutional Convention? It's huge. It's $60,000. There, man.
Virgin.
What, marijuana plants? Big bags of weed? We gotta flush that? We got industrial garbage disposal? I mean, that's not even reasonable. The other part of the Fourth Amendment says there should be no warrants without probable cause. Probable cause is the smell of weed is probable cause. Even if the dog says
he smells weed,
even if that dog is just reacting to the antler giving him a dirt on the leash. So our Fourth Amendment rights have been abrogated. Fifth Amendment is the double jeopardy amendment. You can't be tried twice for the same crime. You can't be under jeopardy life or limit for the same crime. Problem is, they will charge you with a sales charge. But then if they can't get that, they'll charge you with a conspiracy charge. So it's the same crime you committed, but they charge you two different ways. So it's kind of a double jeopardy going on there. You also have the right to, you know, when they on those law and order shows, they say, I plead the fifth. What they're saying is, I plead the right not to incriminate myself. That's the other part of the Fifth Amendment. The problem is, they don't take your urine and your blood. How is that not you incriminating yourself? That should be against the Fifth Amendment rights as well. The other part of the Fifth Amendment says we shall not be deprived of life, liberty, or property without the due process of law. Except, have you heard of this thing called asset forfeiture? Asset forfeiture, civil asset forfeiture, where the cops can take your stuff because they think your stuff committed a crime. There's literally cases in the court, like the United States of America, where it's $863,140. And in civil asset forfeiture, your stuff is guilty until proven. Without you being arrested for a crime or anything, they can take your stuff. They do this all the time in the Midwest with people that even they find a roach in their ashtray. They seize their car, they seize all the cash they got on. And you're supposed to go to court to try to fight to prove your stuff is innocent. But how do you hire the lawyer when they've taken your stuff? Like, you know, they can actually go hire the lawyer. So most people don't. And the cops, when they use this asset forfeiture, they don't use with the idea of my device time, where you go after the cookie and keep things in their mouths, like steal their mouths. They don't laugh at those guys, because those guys can afford lawyers. They go after you and me, and they take just enough to make it worthwhile, but not so much that it's worth your time to fight. They usually take $1,200 to $2,400 worth of stuff, so by the time you hire a lawyer, you have all the work needs, it's going to cost you $5,000 to get your $2,400 back. And most people don't do it. This is a $1 billion fleecing operation. Billions of dollars every year that is going on in America. All right, we have the Sixth Amendment. You have the right to a speedy trial, a speedy public trial. Said Ryan Christie, he's staying in jail for 3 years before they schedule a trial for this guy. 3 years doesn't sound very speedy to me. You have the right to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation and confronted with the witnesses against you. But how do you confront the rough dog? Rough. I don't speak dog, Your Honor. How do I confront this witness? You have the compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in your favor. You can subpoena people to testify for you, but they can't say medical, marijuana in federal court. Cannot say medical, cannot say marijuana. So what good is it to have people testify for me if they can't tell the truth? Seventh Amendment, the right to sue. You have the right to sue people if they do you wrong. Unless you live in Oklahoma and want to sue your dealer for shorting your bag. You can't take them to court, it's illegal. People all over the country cannot sue their dealer, their grower, or anybody involved. Seventh Amendment also says that in any jury trial, it can't be retried once they found you not guilty. But here's how they got around that in California. There was this prosecutor in California who went after this dispensary owner. And they did it by sending a cop with a fake ID. But of course, a cop's fake ID is a real ID, you know what I'm saying? They get it from the DMV. So there's no way you can be Richard Floyd, Jonathan Magny, I thought really hard I could come up with three more names. Too many people die losing this medicine. That's cruel and unusual punishment. And now my favorite amendment. My favorite amendment is kind of a sleeper. It's a dark horse. Most people don't think about the Ninth Amendment. They'll think Second Amendment, guns, Tenth Amendment, you know, states' rights. But the Ninth Amendment, I think, is the best one. It says, the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. I like to think of this as the we could write them all down amendment. When the founders were writing down what our rights were, they could have written down a lot of stuff.
You have the right to take a walk. You have the right to enjoy a sunset. You have the right to kiss your wife. You have the right to be there.
You could write down a ton of rights if you really thought of it. And the Ninth Amendment was their way of saying, look, just because we wrote some stuff in the Constitution, that doesn't mean that's all your rights. I believe that what the Ninth Amendment says is that we have the right to farm cannabis. How could these guys who were hemp farmers not have thought it was a natural right to farm hemp? How could they have not thought that? I mean, it would be as silly to them to write down, you have the right to farm crops, as it would be for us to write down, you have the right to be there. It's just so self-evident to them. They never thought right then. And so I think this amendment says we have that right, that natural right. And then the Tenth Amendment is the states' rights amendment that everyone knows, states' rights. And in the Constitution, and nowhere in the Constitution do they delegate the power to regulate medicine to the federal government, and they do not prohibit the states from regulating medicine. So under strict reading of the Tenth Amendment, medical marijuana is a states' rights issue. So, that's your Bill of Rights. And there's a few other amendments in effect, just real quickly. The 13th Amendment says, that's the amendment where we emancipate the slaves. There shall be no slavery or involuntary servitude. But nowadays, we arrest people for small amounts of marijuana and we put them into a jail, into a prison where they work for the Corrections Corporation of America for 19 cents an hour, booking trips for Greyhound, making panties for Victoria's Secret. I mean, so many corporations are tied up with this prison labor thing. It's an involuntary service. The 14th Amendment is the Equal Protection Amendment. It says if I go from state to state, I should be protected the same in every state. That doesn't apply to medical marijuana patients. They can't even go to all the same medical marijuana states. Only Arizona, Delaware, Maine, Michigan, Montana, and Nevada recognize any state's medical marijuana card. That's six states out of the 23. A medical marijuana patient with a card in Oregon, their card's no good in Washington. Vice versa with the other two states. 15th Amendment was the amendment that said you can't deny people's right to vote because they were slaves or because of the color of their skin or whatever. You can't deny the right to vote. However, this is how they get around that. In most states, when you're a felon and you're in prison, you cannot vote. There's two states where you can. Vermont and Maine, you can be on death row and they'll bring you a ballot. You can fill out your ballot. You never lose your right to vote. In a lot of those states, though, once you're out of prison, you give your right to vote back. But in some others, you don't get it back until you finish probation. And some others, you don't get it until you finish parole. And in a few states, mostly the southern states, you don't get your right to vote back. If you commit a felony, you either lose it for a period of 5 to 7 years, something like that, or in some cases, you never get your right to vote back. One of those states is Florida. Now in Florida, 3/4 of an ounce, 21 grams, is a felony. Anybody caught with an ounce of weed gets a felony, loses their right to vote for life. Now, who gets busted more? Black people. So what happened in Florida is because of felony disenfranchisement, because people in Florida who lose their right to vote very rarely will ever get it back, one out of five voting eligible African-Americans in Florida cannot vote. One out of five cannot vote. Now, remember the 2000 election, Bush v. Gore, when George W. Bush won Florida by 537 votes? If all the people who've been busted for an ounce of weed hadn't lost their right to vote, since they are more likely to have been black people that got busted, and black people, 90 100% vote Democratic. There would have never been a President George W. Bush if marijuana wasn't a felony in Florida. Yeah, yeah. Wouldn't that be nice to hear about it? 16th Amendment for income tax amendment. Well, they're using that to attack the dispensaries. They're using IRS 280E code to attack the dispensaries. So that's another way they're infringing on our rights. 19th Amendment is the women's right to vote. 19th Amendment. From 1980 to 2010, the number of women in prison has increased more than sixfold. And again, when you're in prison in most states, you don't get to vote. So it affects the women's right to vote. And the 21st Amendment, that's the one that repealed the prohibition, right? The original alcohol prohibition. In the 21st Amendment, it actually recognizes the word intoxication. So in our Constitution, it recognizes we have a right to alter ourselves. How is it not equal protection to allow alcohol, but then ban because this is a civil rights fight. It's hard to think of anything that affects 16 out of 27 of the amendments. Sometimes I'll debate these prohibitionists and I'll say, why don't you guys support prohibiting alcohol? They'll say, well, alcohol's different. There's a culture with alcohol. Alcohol's been in our history for years. And I may say, well, what about our culture? We've had hemp in America since 1611. We've had medical marijuana since 1850. We've had hashish bars reported on in the New York Times since 1853. We've had popular musicians like Louis Armstrong, Cab Calloway, Ella Fitzgerald, Dinah Washington, Billie Holiday, that sung openly about marijuana and using it. So we've had a culture in this country for almost 100 years for recreational, 200 years for medical, and 400 years for hemp. How much more culture do we need to get this legal? And of course, this is one of the few issues that speaks to all sides of the political spectrum. To Democrats, this is a civil rights, racial justice, labor sort of issue. On the right, with Republicans, you can say it speaks rights, individualism, small government, liberalism, personal choice, environmentalism, or religious freedom and patriotism. There's a reason for everyone to support legalization. All right, final part to wrap it up. Now what do we do in Oregon? We have marijuana legalization in Oregon. So now we all have our rights, we can all go home. Just enjoy smoking weed. Well, no. There's a whole lot we still have yet to address. Employment rights. We're all subject to our employers using urine testing or hair testing or saliva testing to get a job or keep a job. They're not doing that to alcohol drinkers. You can get all messed up on alcohol, you're not going to lose your job unless you come to work drunk. Custody disputes. Family courts can still use your status as a cannabis consumer as a negative influence on your right to child custody, to adoption, to parenting, visitation. Our medical rights. We can still get denied organ transplants and other medical procedures. Just for now, they fix that for medical marijuana patients. Medical marijuana patients can't kicked off the organ transplant list. Well, why should an adult use consumer be kicked off the organ transplant list for their marijuana use? Our defense rights, I already mentioned the Second Amendment, we can't have guns down because we're abusers of Schedule I substances. Travel rights, an ounce is legal in Oregon, an ounce is legal in Washington, but I can't drive with my ounce from Oregon to Washington. That's interstate road traffic. You can't do that. That's illegal. It's also illegal under Oregon law for exporting to another state. Freedom of speech. We still have those ad restrictions going on in Washington State. You only have this little tiny sign. And probably the one that's in the news lately that we've all been affected by is our right to assembly. Now this is beautiful, right? We all need to be here enjoying each other's company and teaching tomorrow and all that. But there are at least three clubs in Portland that I know of that are so-called cannabis cafes or vapor lounges, if you will. And they've been all volunteer BYOB, bring your own buds. So they don't even serve marijuana there. You have to bring your own, right? And now, in the Pacific Northwest, we don't have any place to serve So the way that the Southerners got around that was with Jim Crow laws, where they have a poll tax or a literacy test or some way to make it so it was impossible for black people to exercise their right to vote. That's what I think these no public use things are for us. We have not a right to use marijuana and possess it, but if you live in Section 8 housing, you can't smoke in your house. Some landlords can ban your use if you're renting. So unless you own that house, you don't have the right to smoke pot anywhere. We need to have vapor lounges. We need to have campus cafes. And Washington has felonized these things. It's a felony to have a campus cafe or a club. Oregon has passed this as part of their Clean Air Act by adding vaporization and cannabinoids to the clean air language. But that's BS, because the clean air language was all about secondhand tobacco smoke. And there are scientific issues with secondhand tobacco smoke. You can't show that from secondhand cannabis vapor. But they just tamped it onto the law, and by January 1st, it's going to make all the cannabis cafes and vapor lounges illegal. But if you run a cigar bar that holds less than 40 people and has adequate ventilation, y'all can smoke cigars in there all day long. If you're a smoke shop that has less than 4 chairs or seats for people and want to allow people to sample tobacco in your smoke shop, that's okay too, so long as you have adequate ventilation. But God forbid you vaporize any cannabis. Well, that's wrong, people. We've got to work to get that changed. We'll wrap up with some maps here. We passed Measure 91 with 56% of the vote, and it said if you were going to ban marijuana businesses, you had to have a vote of the people. But the legislature said if your county voted more than 55% against Measure 91, you don't have to follow the statewide vote. You can just ban. So, those counties in red up there are the counties that have banned all marijuana businesses, and there's no vote. It just is. Nobody gets to vote. The yellow counties are the ones that ban marijuana businesses, but at least there's going to be a vote. In those counties, that makes up 52% of the landmass of Oregon. So in more than half of Oregon, marijuana businesses are banned. Add to that, cities, 45 Oregon cities have passed bans on marijuana commerce. The ones in red, no vote. Those bans are just bans. The ones in black, there will be a vote. If you add up all the people in the cities and the counties, 23% of Oregon's residents live somewhere where marijuana commerce is banned. Put it another way, 1 out of 4 Oregonians lives in over half the state where marijuana business is banned. Now, we do have adult use pot shops where we can get to our campus and these dispensaries that are allowing sales. This is a map of every single dispensary that's selling to all adults. You might notice something about it. Kind of tilted heavy to one side, right? In fact, 92% of the dispensaries selling to adults are within 65-mile profiles of I-5. That strip of I-5 from the coast to the Cascade Range, 92% of your dispensaries are in that range. The only places east of the Cascades are dispensaries in the Dalles, 1, Madras, 3, and then 12, 14, so, 22 total, whatever you want. You know what this means? Look over to the right side. You see where Boise Avenue is over there? And you get to the Oregon border. That's where Ontario, Oregon is. You know, y'all know where Ontario, Oregon is. I'm from Boise originally, and Idaho's laws are really strict, so whenever we wanted to go buy a pot pipe, we had to drive to Ontario. There were no head shops in Boise, we had to drive to Ontario, so it was very dear to me. You know, kind of one of those things when you're coming up, that was kind of a good memory, going to Ontario for a pot pipe. If you live in Ontario, Oregon, the closest pot shop to you is not in Oregon. The closest pot shop to you is up there in Clarkston, Washington. It's closer for an Ontario resident to drive to Clarkston for legal pot than to drive to Bend, the Dalles, or Madras. So we still have a lot of work to do, folks. It's not just about marijuana. It's about freedom. I'll have this PowerPoint. If anyone wants a copy of it, I'll be glad to email it to you. Check out my show. at KansasRadio.com, 3 o'clock. Every week.